So, Megan, what are we doing?
We're doing what skills we would have that we have that would help us on the ground.
Yes. Okay. So, Megan, what skills do you have that would help you survive on the ground as part of the 100?
Well, I recently started indoor rock climbing, which I think could come in handy. I don't think it's a thing that would come up like every day, but like, if we need to scale some cliffs or something, like, I got you. But also, I feel like outdoor rock climbing is like very different than indoor rock climbing.
You like wear
I'm not
the
entirely
little
sure, like,
colored handhold.
exactly. Like, if they're not colored, how do I know that they're safe to use? I think that's the rub there. That's the only thing that comes to mind. I like probably could fish. Like, my mom's taught me to fish. I don't like putting the worms on the hooks. It freaks me out. But that's the most relevant skill I can think of. What about you, Jenna?
So, I mean, I was a Girl Scout, so like I have learned some
Ooh.
sort of like wilderness survival stuff. I probably could start a fire if I really tried. But I feel like the skill, I feel like the strongest skill that I have that might come of use is like I have spent a lot of time playing games like Animal Crossing and Stardew Valley, where you start out with kind of like nothing in the wilderness, and then you have to decide like, okay, how am I gonna design this? What's gonna go where? How can I arrange everything so it's the most efficient? So I feel like I would be good at like managing the camp. I'd be like, okay, this is where we're gonna have tents. We're gonna put medical supplies here. This is how we're gonna organize everything.
Nice, I love it. I'm sold.
All right, let's do it. Hello and welcome to A Bit Much. My name is Jenna.
And I'm Megan, and nowadays on A Bit Much, every week we watch 4 to 5 episodes and read about 50 pages of the TV show slash book The 100, because it's glorious. And this week we
Yes.
have done chapters, so sorry, episodes 5 through 9 and chapters 6 through 9. Sorry.
I think so. So let's get into summaries for episodes.
Yeah,
Yes?
might as well.
You're up first. Go for it.
Thank you. Episode 5. Raven makes it to the ground, revealing that she and Finn are in a relationship he completely neglected to tell Clark about. She is not thrilled. Bellamy throws Raven's radio in the river, only to help find it again. Oh, gosh, it's a lot of summary. Hold on. Bellamy throws Raven's radio in the river, only to help find it again once the others tell him about the planned culling of hundreds of people on the Ark to preserve air. On the Ark, Abby warns the citizens about the Ark's dwindling air supply and the fast approaching culling, inspiring hundreds of people to volunteer their lives. Once they discover the radio cannot be fixed in time, the 100 race against the clock to shoot flares into the sky to signal the Ark that they are still alive and that the culling is unnecessary. Unfortunately, they are too late, and the culling of the volunteers commences as planned. Episode 6. When Octavia goes missing, Bellamy heads a search party to find her, only to be relentlessly hunted by the grounders, killing several people in their party. Meanwhile, Octavia is being kept against her will by a grounder who seems strangely invested in her well-being. Through flashbacks, we see Octavia's birth, the lengths their mother went to in order to protect her, and ultimately her arrest, which occurs when Bellamy lets her go to a masked party so that she can live like a normal girl for one night. We also discover that Commander Shumway was the one to order Bellamy to shoot Jaha in exchange for getting in the dropship with Octavia. Bellamy, Finn, and Jasper eventually find Octavia and the grounder keeping her hostage. Shortly after discovering that the grounder was actually protecting them the whole time, the grounder stabs Finn in the side. They all return to camp with Finn in critical condition. Episode 7. In the midst of a hurricane, Raven makes contact with the Ark so that Abby can talk Clark through treating Finn's wound. Bellamy captures the grounder who held Octavia and brings him back to camp to question him about the grounders. When they discover that the knife used to stab Finn was poisoned, they begin to torture the captured grounder to give them the antidote. He only relents when Octavia, who has advocated for his safety and trustworthiness, poisons herself. On the Ark, plans have begun for Project Exodus, the process of returning civilization to the ground, during which Abby's council seat is given to Diana, a former chancellor with suspicious intentions. It is also revealed that Project Exodus can only send 700 people to the ground, a significantly smaller number than the Ark's total population.
Okay. Episode 8. While everyone is high on hallucinogenic nuts, Octavia helps the grounder, who we discover his name is Lincoln, escape, which Finn sees. Bellamy and Clark go on a trip for supplies, where they find some guns, confront their guilt and trauma through hallucinations, and fight off Dax, who Shumway had ordered to kill Bellamy. Bellamy is pardoned by Jaha, and he informs on Shumway. After Shumway is arrested, we discover that he was reporting to Diana Sidney, the new council member, and she has him killed in order to cover her tracks. Episode 9. It's Unity Day, the celebration of the various space stations coming together to form the Ark. A bomb goes off during the celebration on the Ark. This is the first step in a mutiny by Diana Sidney, which ends with her launching the Exodus ship with her followers on it, only for it to crash on the ground. Octavia has started a romantic relationship with Lincoln, and she sneaks off to see him. Finn tries diplomacy with the grounders, having Lincoln set up a meeting between Clark and the grounder leader Anya. However, neither side trusts each other, and the meeting ends in violence.
Nice. Also, summaries are so hard. Reading the back, I was like, oh, I forgot that. I forgot that. I forgot that.
Well, that's why our podcast is an hour long, and it's not just 5 minutes of us summarizing.
That is very true.
So we can go more in depth about all the stuff. So in episode 5, that's when, basically when it's decided that they are going to do the culling, and they're kind of, you know, figuring out how they're going to do that, what's going to happen with that. And again, it's like, it's interesting watching this back, or I guess watching this with a more sort of careful eye, because it's like, obviously from the framing of the show and from what we as the audience know, it's like, well, of course Abby is right. Abby's the one who's like, you have to wait, you know, we have to wait for Raven to get back to us so we know if the ground is survivable. Like, you can't just kill hundreds of people, you know, without knowing that for sure. But, like, from the perspective of Jaha and Kane, like, they genuinely believe that, you know, the 100 have died, that Raven has died, like, that it's not survivable. So, like, they're doing the most reasonable thing in that situation.
No, yeah, like, that's very true. And, like, the fact that, like, the longer they wait, like, every day, like, more people are going to have to die in the calling, yeah. Like, huge incentive to, like, get it over with or whatever. So, yeah, it's really, like we've said, these freaking moral dilemmas are really, really difficult. My question, though, is kind of, like, how the calling ends up, though, because I don't know. Like, that's a very nice and idyllic way to think about the human race, but I'm not so sure that's how shit would go down.
Right. So first, when they're talking about the culling, they're going to make it look like an accident, right? Like, they're just going to kill the people who happen to live in this one section and just make it look like a malfunction, which, again, I have the hindsight of knowing how it actually turns out, but I'm like, keeping this a secret from the population and just killing 300 people and then saying it was a mistake, like, if you ever get caught up in that lie, if people ever find out about that cover-up, like, you are so fucked as a political leader.
Yeah. Like, no, that is, like, very true.
So, like, then, as you said in your summary, Abby ends up telling the whole Ark what is going on. And, of course, she's doing it in order to try and prolong things so that they can hear back from Raven.
Yeah.
But she also literally plays her husband's video that he was going to share that he got killed over. And it's like, Wow, Abby, I bet you feel bad for telling on him now.
It's like you literally did the same exact thing, like to a T. Like, yeah, yikes on a stick.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this is kind of consistent throughout the show. I feel like Abby is like the biggest hypocrite of this entire show. It's like kind of a theme for her.
Yes, yeah. But yeah, so then once the information is out, then, you know, they can't do it as a cover-up, but then there's this, you know, this heartwarming moment. Like, I cried. I knew what was going to happen, and I still cried when people showed up and started being like, yeah, I'll sacrifice my life for other people to live. Yeah. Which, you're right that it turned out real nice. I do think that there's a kernel of truth in that, right? In terms of like, yeah, there would definitely be people who would understand like, hey, everyone's going to die if some people don't die. And, you know, who would be like, okay, well, I want my kids to live or whatever. So like, I'm willing to sacrifice myself. Like, I definitely think that is a possibility. I think that is the reaction that some people would have. But it's like, wow, they were real lucky that enough people volunteered.
Right, like they literally had to turn people away. They're like, we had to reject, you know, essential personnel and things like that. And it's like, okay. But like also, like, so some people would, yeah, they would go the complete, like, great humanistic way. But then there are people who would, like, immediately start rioting. Like, that's just the truth. Yeah. So it's like, in a show that's usually shows, you know, usually the worst case scenario. It was just, I found it interesting that they went kind of best case. And then even, like, when they actually, like, killed the people, like, it was, like, so nice and poetic. And, like, everyone just kind of went to sleep. And I was like, that's also not, like, how people die. Like, people would be panicking. Like, people would be changing their minds at the last second. Like, it would be horrific. Like, it was just a little too pretty for my taste.
See, that's interesting. Because I also thought that, like, the way that they framed that scene where those people do die, I thought it was weird that it was just so, like, like, just quiet and calm. Which, I mean, yes, you're right. Some people might be panicking. But from my perspective, I was like, people would be singing. People would be praying. People would be drinking and laughing and talking and crying. Like, you know, like, even if everyone knew, like, oh, yeah, we're going to die. And even if everyone accepted that, they, like, I found it odd that the way that it was so sort of, like, solemn, you know?
No, that's a good point I didn't think about. I only thought about, I don't know why I was in worst case scenario mode, but I was thinking about worst case scenario. But you're right, like, it's just weird that they all had the same reaction. Like, that's just not how people work.
Yeah. But this, the culling also gave us this sort of first insight or first example of, I guess this is maybe like a hindsight thing. But it's the first time that Jaha is trying to sacrifice himself for his people.
Yeah.
Which will become, like, an aggressively recurring theme.
Yes. But it's just, like, even, like, I just, like, I literally wrote, like, in my notes, like, in my opinion, Jaha is a cop-out coward. I don't think, I mean, like, I get the noble idea behind it, but I really also think he just is tired of being chancellor, and he thinks that Wells is dead, and he just wants to give up. Like, I'm totally on Abby's side when she's like, you're literally just giving up. Like, this is not cool.
That was, like, something that was, like, a question that I wrote down while watching this episode, which we don't have to talk about this now necessarily, because we can, I think, look at it maybe from, like, a bigger scope. But, like, the question I wrote down was just, like, is Jaha a good leader? Like, overall, like, I don't know why, but it's, like, I've never thought, like, I analyze his individual actions a lot, but it's, like, overall, better than not or not?
I don't think so. If anything, he's, like, aggressively average. Like, I feel like...
Yeah.
I don't think he's a good leader, because it's like, yeah, he makes like hard decisions, right? He's like, okay, yeah, we have to have the culling. Yeah, we have to send these kids to the ground. But it's also, like, he's the one that, like, pardoned Abby because she saved his life. And it's, like, he just feels so wishy-washy as a leader. Like, I don't know. I just don't particularly like him as a person. Yeah. So it's hard to be like, yeah, he's a good leader. But I think he's mostly just, like, he uses, like, gravitas to, like, pretend to be important. But, like, I feel like he has no substance behind it.
Yeah. So that kind of covers stuff on the arc. You want to talk about the love triangle happening on the ground?
Oh, God. I am not a fan of love triangles. Not a fan of this love triangle. I mean...
Okay, I'm interested by that. Tell me more.
So, I just find it tiresome. The only part that I do find interesting is the fact that, like, Finn... did it, well, not did it because, but, like, the factor that makes it okay is that he thought he was never going to see Raven again. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, yeah, but, like, there's a part in there where they say that he only waited 10 days have sex with Clark. And I'm like, okay, that's cold as fuck, first of all.
Okay, but on, okay, I'm gonna play Finn's advocate here, because on the other hand, you're right, they'd only been on the ground 10 days or whatever. But, again, the moment that it actually turned from just they were friendship and they were maybe kind of flirty, but also he flirts with everyone, was, like, it was this moment of passion when he was scared and she was comforting her, and then all of a sudden they start kissing, right? So it's like, that was not a, like, it's not, like, if they hadn't lost contact with the Ark, like, on that 10th day, I don't think he would have done it, you know? Like, I don't know.
It wasn't like he was like,
I'm totally willing to ditch Raven now that I'm down on the ground. Or it's like, or it would have happened differently, right? Like, maybe over time he would have realized, like, you know what? I really do have feelings for Clark and I want to be with her. But then he would have, like, dealt with that in, like, a mature way, hopefully, I assume, instead of, like, this... again, this, like, very particular situation where two things happened at once, which was, like, he assumed that he had lost contact with all of the Ark forever, and, like, he and Clark had this moment of passion.
Okay, I suppose. And, I mean, like, the one thing that I have just thought of now that I hadn't thought of before is, like, I don't know how long he was in, like, lockup before... mm-hmm. getting to the ground. So it could have been, like, this has already been, like, a disintegrating relationship where it's, like, they never get to see each other.
They could only see each other, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I suppose that's a point. But it's also, like, he never mentions her. Like,
I know, that's the really bad part.
Like, yeah, I miss my girlfriend who's on the arc. Like,
yeah.
And he's, like, immediately flirting with Clark. Like, it just feels gross to me. Personally.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, which, like, we didn't see on camera really any of them doing, like, either Clark or Finn, at least, doing a lot of, like, sharing about their personal life. I guess we found, like, Finn sort of interrogate, not, I mean, not in a bad way, but he asked questions about Clark's life in order to understand, like, why she hated Wells and what was going on with her parents and, like, all that. So, like, he was asking questions to find out about her personal life, but, like, We literally didn't really learn anything about Finn's personal life until Raven comes down, you know? So it's like...
yeah.
But, like, yeah, but I agree that it was shady.
Right? It's like, because you can make excuses. Like, maybe he's in denial. Maybe he doesn't want to talk about it. Like, you know, but it's not like Finn is, like, manly man, no feelings guy. Like, he's, like, sensitive and sweet. Yeah. And so it feels, this is why I don't like it. It feels very forced on Finn's character. There's no justification for it in the end. Like, we can infer as much as we want to, but it's like, he seems like this really, really nice person who wouldn't do something like this, and it feels like just jackhammered in there for the drama.
Yeah, or I guess, like, no, I think that's actually a really good point, because you're right. What we see, like, we see Finn as this kind of, like, you know, he's characterized in the beginning sort of as this, like, bad boy or whatever, but that's kind of this persona he puts on. And, like, he, again, we see him give really good counsel and just generally be a good friend. And then in these episodes that we watched for this week, it's like he's so much about trying to make people get along and like, you know, all be friends and whatnot. So yeah, no, I agree. It does seem out of character, or at least that like, yeah, I mean, I'm just inferring more stuff that like, you know, yeah, maybe it, like, it would have been good for him at least to, after they hooked up, to say like, hey, look, Clark, I need to confess something. Like, I'm in a relationship. Yeah. And I know that that's like, doesn't really exist now anymore, I don't know. You're right. It's still a gross thing that he did. And there's not a lot of justification for it.
Yeah. So that's how I feel about that. But I also, I'm glad that it's not like, that Raven and Clark don't just automatically hate each other. Like, there's tension for obvious reasons, but it's like they still, like, work together. They still, like, get over their shit to, like, help save him and all this stuff. So it's not, like, it doesn't feel catty. Like, it's still, like, in the background, it's still annoying every time, like, they make Raven, like, look at them for too long, like, oh, they're connecting or whatever. I'm just, like, so over it. But, you know, at least it's not... you know, it's not taking precedence over survival, so at least there's that.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much everything I've got for this episode. You want to move on?
I just want to say one thing, that the first time you see Bellamy in this episode, he's waking up with two women in his...
with a woman under each arm!
Which, oh my god, I just forgot how much of a dick he was. Like, when he goes to Raven and he, like, sees her and she's unconscious and bleeding and he just takes the radio and leaves her there. I'm like, oh my god, Bellamy used to be such an asshole. God.
Yeah. No, I can't wait for him to become more likable.
Yeah. That's all I gotta say.
Okay. So, speaking of Bellamy... in the following episode, we get a lot of background around Bellamy and Octavia's life, which involves seeing a flashback to when Octavia was born. And the actor playing young Bellamy looked at least 10 years old. So under that assumption, that means that he is now 27 and fully, like... 10 years older than, like, all of the rest of the 100, at least.
Oh my god, that's so funny. I didn't even think about that, but that's a very good point, right? Because you just assume he's, like, 21 or 22, like, not that much older. But then, right, he would be, like, what, 3 when she was born or something?
Yeah, that child was, like, I, in my day-to-day job, like, the classroom that I work in, is full of 7 and 8 year olds, and he absolutely looked older than the kids that I teach.
Oh my god, that's so funny. I did not even think about the implications of that. That's hilarious. Yikes.
But then also in that scene, like, so the mom gives birth, of course, very difficult thing to do alone, in secret, because no one can know that she's having this child. And then, like, hands the baby to Bellamy, starts to fall asleep, and he's panicking. He's like, what the hell do I do with this baby? Mom, you can't fall asleep. And she goes, your sister, your responsibility. And it's like, what the fuck, lady? This is you're the mother. This is your responsibility.
Like, actually, he's not the one that got you into this mess. So maybe we shouldn't put all the responsibility on this child, this either, you know, 5 to 10 year old child. Yeah, no, like, Bellamy and Octavia's mom is, like, very intense. She's a strange person. Like, a very, I don't know how to describe her, just except intense, like... Which I get, like, most of, like, all of the scenes we see her in are very, like, intense scenes, and they're, like, high-strung, and they're a lot of tension, but it's also, like, she strikes me as a weird woman. Like, I don't think they had, like, a great childhood, and not even just because they had to hide Octavia. Like, I just don't think she was, like, she does, I hate to say, like, not a great mom, because she does all of this stuff for her children, but it's also, like, I just don't think she was, like, a fun, cool mom, you know?
Right, yeah, she was so focused on survival that, like, she, which again, it's like, yeah, this makes sense. I understand that would be your priority. But yeah, that's like, she didn't treat her children with a lot of like, love. I don't know, like respect almost, or yeah. compassion. Yeah. So, yes, but just, yeah, just the idea that it's like, you know, the scene is clearly trying to instill the fact that like Bellamy feels responsible for Octavia. He has his whole life. He always has wanted to take care of her. But like that started because his mother was literally like, this child that I just had illegally is your responsibility.
Yeah, that was pretty heavy handed. That's like, it's like we can infer, you know, like we're not that stupid. Like we can infer from all these scenes or whatever that he feels this way. She doesn't literally need to give him that mantra. Like he can come up with that on his own. Mm-hmm. On the record, it broke my heart when he got older. Because he sees, so like part of the whole deal is that, like you said in your summary, his mother like prostitutes herself. I don't know if you said this in your summary, but
I didn't, but yeah,
go ahead. Yeah, so she like basically prostitutes herself to guards so that like, or this one like head guard guy, so that he'll tell her when they're gonna have like quote unquote random inspections so she can hide Octavia or whatever. And so, and like this is obviously like the way she kind of like helps them all survive and all this, and she doesn't enjoy it, but you know, she feels that it's the only way to protect her family. So Bellamy sees this, and he sees like, you know, like the subjugation his like mother goes through and all of that, and then it breaks my heart when he is older and it's like Octavia's on the dropship and, sorry, back up a little bit. It's when he takes Octavia to the dance or whatever, which is adorable. It's a masked dance, so she can be out and about and dance, and it's very cute, and Bellamy's all happy. But then, of course, they have like a weird, I think there's like a sun flare coming or something, and they have to like ID everyone for some reason. And so, obviously, Octavia doesn't have an ID, so he's trying to get her out of there, but he can't, and then a guard comes up to them and, like, asks for her ID, and he says, like, I'll do whatever you want, and it's just like, oh, God, because like, that's how he thinks it works, that's how he thinks, like, authority works, and that's how, like, oh, it just hurt my heart so much, because he's like, that's what his mom always did. So he's like, that's what I have to do. Like, I'll do whatever they want, whatever people in charge want to protect my family. And then, like, he does it again when she's on the dropship and he's, like, trying to get to her. And Shumway's like, hey, kill Jaha. Like, I'll make you a deal. Like, how the people in authority have always treated him and his family. Like, I'll make you a deal. If you do this terrible thing, like, then you can be with your family. And, like, he just accepts that that's normal and that's how things work. Like, oh, it kills me.
Yeah, yeah. We also, in one of the flashbacks, saw their mother give a kind of similar speech about fear and about slaying your demons. Ooh. So we kind of got that.
That is very true.
So we also got some background on Raven and Finn's relationship. We found out about Raven. She had this, like, negligent alcoholic mother, and how Finn was sort of like her first friend and like helped her survive and everything. So like it gives you more insight about their relationship. But then we also have like that scene where, yeah, like as you mentioned, like Raven says like he could have waited more than 10 days, which valid. And that's, I would say like that's kind of the only time that Clark and Raven like fight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and Raven's very upset, and, you know, I can sit here rationally being like, it's not Clark's fault, like, get mad at Finn, don't get mad at Clark, which she does, like, Raven doesn't, she just tries to deny it with Finn. But then, like, at the end of that scene, Raven asks Clark, do you love him? And Clark goes, I hardly know him. And it's like, yikes.
Wait, why is that a yikes?
I mean, it's, I don't know, it was just to me, like, so then she leaves the room and Raven breaks down, and, like, and I can almost see how that's worse, right? That it's, like, it's not that he's, like, even, like, in love with her or anything. It, like, it makes it seem even more of a betrayal to Raven that it's, like, Clark doesn't even care that much about this thing that has, like, ruined her life. Like, the fact that, you know, and the fact that, like, Clark, too, is even kind of admitting, like, do I love this guy? Like, No, I hardly know him. Yeah. I don't want to be in this situation. I didn't know what I was signing up for. Like clearly her feelings are hurt, but just that she's like, yeah, I don't even have that much skin in this game.
Yeah.
Whereas to Raven, he's everything, and he has betrayed her for this girl who hardly knows him.
No, that is, yeah, I didn't think about that. Because it's so hard to decide, because I have never been in this, this exact situation is very hard to decide. Okay, but, I've never been in a situation where I've, been cheated on or whatever. So, I don't know if it would be worse if it was just, a one-off, didn't mean anything, or if they were, in love with the other person. I don't know what's worse. That's a very good point. But, yeah, the fact that she is kind of, that's the one thing, another thing that, makes me able to stand this love triangle is that Clark is not falling over herself, depressed. She's oh, well, this is awkward. I think it's mostly what she's feeling. But what is so funny is that, reading the summaries on Wikipedia for the episodes or whatever, just to remind myself what happens, they describe, there's this one sentence that cracks me up. It says, Clark and Finn follow and help Raven, who is revealed to be Finn's girlfriend, leaving Clark devastated. Did we watch the same show? Because I'm pretty sure she's not at all devastated.
She's clearly hurt, but again, not devastated. But just I just love seeing Finn flounder in those scenes. When they show up and they see Raven and his face is just like, fuck, fuck, fuck. What do I do?
Oh my gosh. And I don't know, I don't know if it makes it better or worse that Finn isn't just like, oh yeah, it was a mistake, it won't happen again. He's like, but I have feelings for you. I think it's better. It makes me like Finn more because it's at least he's not trying to just write it off. He does actually have feelings for her. He's a sensitive little soul.
He is.
He has a lot of feelings. So,
So another line from this episode that I thought was really key in terms of setting up stuff for the future is, so at the end of the last episode, the culling happened, and then after the culling, Abby and Jaha saw those flares that the 100 set off. And again, they didn't know exactly, what that meant, what that signal was. But to Abby, it for sure signaled, people are alive on Earth. Those people didn't have to die. And so it's this, terrible tragedy, right? Of, oh, God, we did this terrible thing, and ultimately it wasn't even necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And on the ground, there's a point where I believe Clark says about Bellamy, someone gets mad at Bellamy, I don't remember the context now, and says, this is your fault, you're the one who tried to cut us off from the Ark, you're the one who, threw the radio away or whatever, this is your fault. And Clark says he knows, now he has to live with it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's a theme throughout the show for lots of characters, right? For lots of characters who, at various times... either intentionally do terrible things or by their own mistakes cause tragedies to happen and then have to figure out how to live with it.
Yeah, heavy stuff. Is this the one? I'm getting lost now. I'm trying to remember what happened in this episode. This is the one where she goes missing, Octavia.
Yeah.
Okay. So... this is when she gets taken by Lincoln, which is also kind of a, as much as I love Lincoln, Lincoln is my heart, Lincoln is my soul, but, this plot point feels very strange to me. that he steals her in the first place, I guess, because she fell down a hill.
Yeah, he found her when she was injured, so ostensibly he was taking her to... take care of her. I mean, he did. He, stitched up a wound that she had.
Right, but it's if he speaks English, why didn't he just, be like, hey, no, chill, it's fine, I'm not here to hurt you. but he had to be all... I don't know, it just feels kind of contrived to me. this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly contrived to a certain extent. But, okay, so, like, another important part of this episode is that while they're looking for Octavia, the, like, search party is caught by this other group of grounders, and multiple people are killed.
Yeah.
Like, again, not important characters that we care about, but multiple people are killed by these grounders. So, like, that is their experience now, is that, like, these people don't even know us, never have communicated with us, and they just want to murder us straight up.
Yeah.
Whereas Octavia has this experience where, yes, she's freaked out because she's trapped in this cave, and she is kind of kidnapped by this grounder who won't talk to her, who she believes can't speak English, but she also knows that he did, like, he helped heal her wound and all this stuff. So it's like, then in later episodes, when they have Lincoln hostage or whatever, it's like they have these very different attitudes towards them just because of their own experiences. I don't know. I also think it's kind of contrived that Lincoln never spoke to them, but I could also see, because, like, especially in the later episode when, like, you know, they have him tied up and eventually end up torturing him, it's like by pretending that he can't understand them, he's getting a lot of really useful information that they otherwise might not say in front of him.
That's true. I mean, it is a way to, because, like, by helping this girl, he must feel like he's betraying his people, right? So it's like, if he doesn't talk to her, maybe it makes it better, you know? Because maybe he thinks if he starts talking to her, he'll let something slip or something? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. I think it's more probably just, like, a strategy to, like, feel these people out before revealing that they can communicate, right? Like, how do these people act when they think that you don't understand them?
True. Yeah, I think that's good for this episode. I mean, yikes, yeah. Finn gets stabbed. That shocking. The next episode is intense. Very intense. Freaking, there's torture, there's poison, there's a hurricane, there's a lot going on.
Yes, we get the introduction of Diana.
Mm-hmm.
We see the three people in a love triangle performing surgery together.
which is granted not, you know, something you see every day in the love triangle.
So, like, at the beginning of this episode, Abby gets a trial for her crimes and is pardoned, but she can't be on the council anymore. But she did get a trial this time, which means that when Kane tried to execute her last time, he was absolutely, like, not following protocol.
Yeah, no, Kane was very gung-ho about just killing people left and right. Yeah. By the book, but obviously not very, very much by the book if we're not going to give her a trial. But it was funny because it was like, this is like the only time Abby has faced any consequences, and it's like, just for the plot though, so that Diana Sidney can get in there and ruin some shit.
Yeah. So we see the Diana Sidney. She doesn't really do much this episode, huh? She's just kind of introduced. She gets this. First, she kind of says to Jaha, like, give me the council seat. And he's like, no. But then there's, like, when he's making this announcement to tell everyone, like, this is the truth. We sent the 100 down to the ground. We've discovered now that they're alive. We're going to end up going down there, whatever. And there's this one heckler in the crowd who is like, his wife died in the culling. And he's like, we'll never forgive you, whatever. And he's like, I don't know if I can trust you, whatever. Just like, and so finally, just to capitulate, to try and, like, emphasize unity, Jaha goes like, okay, well, Diana is going to be on the council now and you trust her, so we'll work together. And then, like, as people, like, celebrate that, there's a look between the heckler and Diana that makes clear that he was just a plant. Like, it's all just her scheme. And throughout the next few episodes, she is such, like, a master manipulator. Like, she's so good at, like, keeping information until the exact right moment to drop it in her favor.
Yes. Yes, no, that's very true. She's a snake. You can see it from right at the beginning, though. There's someone in her face. You're just like, I don't trust you, lady. But that's also, like, I don't know how that plan would actually work. There's, like, a lot of factors. Like, maybe she had some contingency plans or whatever, but it's like, I don't know. Maybe she just knows how to play Jaha because he's really stupid and actually not a very good leader, but I don't know. And I mean, like, the biggest thing is that she represents the working people, and, like, he needs their support because it's, like, they're the people who hate him the most.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, fair, honestly. Because if you look at the way, like, the flashbacks from, like, Bellamy's childhood and then, like, Clark's flashbacks were, like, in this nice apartment, like, watching soccer games. Like, everything's hunky-dory. Like, totally get it.
Yeah. Okay, so the other, I think, two big things I want to talk about for this episode are the torture and Kane.
Oh, yeah. Let's go torture town.
So, like, something that I wrote in my notes is that, like, near the beginning of this episode, first of all, there's a storm outside, and, like, Finn is in bad condition, and they're trying to get a radio connection to the Ark so that Abby can help Clark perform surgery on Finn, essentially. And in the midst of that, Bellamy and some other people come back with, like, an unconscious Lincoln who they've captured to interrogate, basically. And it's like there always have to be, like, 12 different problems happening in this show. It's like there was already so much conflict, and then they also brought in a hostage.
No, that's really true. It's like they're not sure how many seasons they were going to get. So they're like, any problem anyone has, just throw it on the board. We'll fit it into as many episodes as we can.
Yeah. But yeah, so when they first bring Lincoln in as, you know, a captive, Clark says to Bellamy, she says, this isn't who we are. And Bellamy replies, it is now. So again, that tension of do we deserve to survive and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, so clearly Clark is very against it. But then when the moment comes, Clark is like, okay, go ahead and torture him. Right? We need information.
Like, I'm kind of shocked by the amount of people who are pro-torture in this scenario.
Yes, literally, like, everyone but Octavia was like, it's okay to torture him.
Right, because it's, what, three of them. It's Bellamy first with the freaking seatbelt, which also, that's, I don't know about the optics with that. I don't know if I want to get into this, but it's like a white-presenting guy. I don't know actually what Bob Morley's ethnic background is, but a white presenting guy, like, basically whipping a black man, like, it's hard to ignore the implications of that. And it's not great. Yeah, part of me is kind of like, all right, showrunners, like, there's really no other way to torture this guy. Like, it felt kind of gross to me. I didn't love it.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, and then when that doesn't work, Clark comes up, and she, what does she do to him?
She never actually does anything, but she says okay to Bellamy. She just lets him.
Doesn't she
do it?
Put the nail or something through his hand?
No, she didn't do that. Bellamy did it.
Bellamy did that?
She condoned it.
Oh, God. Oh, that was awful.
And yeah, then the whole, like, crucifixion imagery, and, like, ugh, stuff going through your hands. It's the worst.
Oh, there's so much in there. There's so much delicate stuff. Anyway, and then Raven comes up, and she's like, let's try electrocuting him. It's like, Jesus, guys. Like, everyone take a goddamn breath.
Yeah. Just for background information, Bob Morley has a Filipina mother and an Australian-Irish father.
All right.
That's the other thing about this show is that, like, 80% of the actors are Australian.
Yeah.
It's really weird to hear them talk
as
themselves and not as characters.
Right? They have really good, like, American accents.
I would never have guessed that they were Australian.
No.
Anyway. So, yeah, literally everyone but Octavia is, like, okay with the torture. Octavia finally gets him to, which, and I'm kind of like, look, you've been torturing him already and he's not giving you information. Like, I don't think continuing down this line of reasoning is going to get you anything. But
yeah.
Octavia finally gets him to do it when she cuts herself with the same knife so that she will now be poisoned if he doesn't give them the antidote. So that works out. And this, I think this episode and this scene is like really the start of sort of a divide between Octavia and everyone else, right?
Yeah. Which,
like, we see some in the next few episodes, but then especially just throughout the series, we're going to see Octavia kind of going off on her own path and not having the same, like, allegiance to the people from the Ark as everyone else does.
Yeah. Which, I mean, like, makes sense because she's been, like, isolated her entire life.
Right, yeah. She already sort of has, like, the least amount of connection to these other people. So,
yeah.
Like, she's more willing to go native. Kane?
Oh, Kane grows a conscience.
Yes. We see Kane express some emotion in this episode, which is new for him.
Wow, look at him go. Yeah, so it's basically the calling breaks him, right? He's like, well, the fact that they didn't have to do it. The fact that it was for nothing. That he didn't, like, he was like, if I had just waited a day, 2 days, they would be alive. And that really gets to him, which, you know, get it. That's awful. So it's just kind of cool to see that, though, because it could have totally, it would have been really easy to just make Kane the bad guy for as long as they're on the Ark. But, like, to see him actually think about the implications of, you know, killing hundreds of people by the book, like, is, I like it.
Yeah, no, it's some good development for him just beyond sort of a villain.
Yeah.
And sort of, like, with the existence of Diana now, we have another villain character. Mm-hmm. So they're like, we can complicate Kane now. But so there's a point where he's talking to his mother, and his mom is kind of like this, like, religious leader on the Ark. And, you know, he's talking about all this guilt that he feels for doing this. And his mother says, you know, something like, I know that God will forgive you. The question is, will you be able to forgive yourself? Which, to me, I thought was so, like, set up this parallel between Kane and Bellamy. You know, that, like, in the last episode, that was something explicitly that Clark said of, like, you're going to have to live with yourself now. You're going to have to figure out how to do that. And it's like, Kane is going through the same thing. He feels responsible for the culling, and now he has to live with himself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good parallel. And how it both kind of, not softens them, but just makes them self-reflective for almost the first time for each of them. So it's like, and damn, when that self-reflection is a dick, he goes and makes some changes. I think it's a good segue into the next episode.
Okay, sounds good.
So in that episode, isn't that the hallucination one?
That is the, everyone gets super high on these nuts.
Which, as a plot device, is kind of silly, but also, you know, it works. So they find that, like...
No, I love it.
Yeah. So also, only for this one episode is winter a problem. But, like, winter is coming. They'll freeze to death before we, you know, get down there or whatever. And they're like, let's send them to this, you know, underground supply depot or whatever so they can get food and maybe it can be a shelter for the winter. So that's what sends Clark and Bellamy off on their little mission. Clark is funny. She is like, why is she so angsty this episode?
She has now contacted her mom, but is still extremely upset with her over the fact that she caused her father's death.
Right.
And she is tired of dealing with the bullshit that is Finn and Raven's relationship.
Yes. And, like, everyone's talking to their parents. Like, everyone, all the 100 are getting to talk to their parents. And, like, don't you want to talk to your mom? She's like, no, she killed my dad. And all this. So... So when she goes up to Bellamy and was like, hey, do you want to go to the supply depot or whatever? He was like, why me? And she was like, I don't feel like being around anybody I like right now. I thought that was very funny.
But okay, so speaking of that, I feel like this, so then they go to this like underground bunker basically looking for supplies and pretty much everything is gone or useless or whatever. But then they do find these guns. Which Bellamy is very excited about. But then there's this moment where Bellamy is teaching Clark how to shoot. And, you know, it's like the classic, like, like teaching someone how to do something. So then you, like, you know, put your arms around them to, like, arrange them. So that, I think, is, like, the very first sign of any kind of romantic undertones in their relationship.
Yes, and I love it. I love that cliche moment. I don't know what it is, but it makes me happy every time.
Yeah, so anyway, but then they each start hallucinating on their own. And I also think that this is, like, a really sort of humanizing moment for Bellamy. I mean, this is a turning point at the end of this episode, I would say, for him. But because we see, like, all of the guilt that he has for the people that he has hurt or inadvertently caused their death. Like, and again, before this, he's kind of, like, always put on this, like, really, you know, harsh exterior, right? Like, we've seen that that's how he deals with fear, is by gaining power and doing something about it. But, like, this was this moment where we got to see him be really scared and guilty.
Yes. But I'm also confused about how the hallucination works, because, like, he's getting beat up by Jaha. So, like, is he just, like, writhing on the ground?
Yeah, I don't really know what the, what that was supposed to be.
And then this freaking Dax kid is just so gung-ho about murder. Like, how come Shumway is, like, really good at getting people to murder other people?
Well, we're introduced to Dax by Shumway contacts him from the Ark, and he's like, hey, you beat a man to death, right? And Dax is like, kid, yeah, right? He stole from me.
Dax remorse for killing a man.
Right, yeah. So I would say, like, when he convinced Bellamy to murder someone, he was like, you know, he knew his weakness, basically. He was like, I know I can manipulate you to do anything for your sister. And with Dax, he was like, I know that you will kill someone for basically no reason, so.
That's okay, because Dax doesn't last very long.
Yeah.
He's another killed person.
So this is where we find out that Lincoln can speak English.
Mm-hmm.
Because Octavia goes up to try and help him, and he speaks to her. He reveals his name. And then she manages to use the distraction of everyone being extremely high on nuts to get him out of there. And before he leaves, he kisses her.
I loved it so much. I know it wasn't super great timing. I know he's got to get out of there, but it was so sweet, and I loved them so much.
Okay, that's interesting, because we can just talk about the relationship, too, which goes into the next episode. Because from my perspective, I am weirded out by their relationship at this point. Like, I know what it evolves into, and I like it in the long run of the show, but at this point, I feel like there's some weird... First of all, I don't know how old Lincoln is.
That's a very good point, because he looks really old.
Yes, and Octavia is 17.
That is true. That was one thing I did think about when they kissed. I was like, wait, how old is Lincoln supposed to be? That is awkward.
And then also the fact that, like, their relationship did start with him kind of kidnapping her and chaining her up. And I understand that he also helped her, but, like, that's still, like, a lot of uncomfortable dynamics that I'm not a fan of.
Listen, that's how her mother? That's how her mother showed her love. We're always fucked up by our parents. We always fall in love with our parents.
Yes,
you know this.
And it, like, traumatized her for life.
Just because you're traumatized by something doesn't mean you also don't love it. Just saying. That's what makes it so traumatizing. Anyway, no, I totally get the creepy undertones and the fact that he was, like, basically stalking her before kidnapping her, because he has all these pictures that he drew of her. And, like, right, like, so on one level, kind of sweet, right? He sees this beautiful girl, he draws a picture. On the other part, really creepy stalker behavior. Like, it's really hard to...
Especially because she's 17, also.
Especially because she's 17. She could be 18 now, she could have had her birthday, you don't know.
They've been there for, like... For 10 days.
Maybe her birthday was in 9 days.
Anyway, let's see what else happens. Clark talks to her father in her hallucination and basically, by the end of it, kind of decides to forgive her mom, or realizes that she has to eventually forgive her mom.
Yeah.
And also just talks about, like, the weight of leadership, like, of how stressed out Clark is about making sure people survive.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's about it for this episode. We've got some stuff at the end where Finn is, like, the fact that Clark is trusting Bellamy now is, like, upsetting to Finn.
Yeah.
And Finn sees Clark going down this more violent path, basically.
Yeah. And the moment at the end, oh, that's so good, when Lincoln gets out of the dropship and he's, like, almost to the fence, and then he, like, runs into Finn, and Finn, like, recognizes him, and then Finn just, like, nods over his shoulder, like, you better go. Yeah. Like, that's such a cool moment. I loved that.
Yeah, it was good.
All right, next episode. What happened? I can't. So many episodes.
I mean, we basically start out, well, we start out with Unity Day. We're introduced to the idea of Unity Day. And then there's a terrorist attack.
Oh, God, yeah, bomb. Which, ballsy move, setting off a bomb in a freaking space station, like.
Right? As though that couldn't go wrong in so many ways.
But it ends up killing, what, like, 8 people? One of them is Kane's mother, because we're just gonna beat Kane to a pulp so that he becomes a real person.
Yeah, I cried when he.
Oh, my God, yeah.
She died, and he was, like, saying the little blessing, and, like, oh, my God.
Right, like, when he had just said before, he's like, I don't remember it. Be like, you do remember it.
He's, like, trying to brush her off, like, Mom, I don't, I'm not religious anymore, like, leave me alone. And then she dies, and he, like, says their little blessing. It was devastating. Meanwhile, on the ground, they're all, like, getting crazy drunk.
Which is fun. And, like, Bellamy's like, hey, Clark, you should get drunk. And she's like, you know what? I should get drunk.
Yeah.
Which
but
is
it was
great.
Also, it was like, it was so sad because you saw her getting drunk and, like, playing quarters and having a good time, and then Finn has to show up and be like, hey, I organized a meeting with the grounders, like, you have to come be a leader now.
Like, she's like, fucking fine. And he's like, oh yeah, and also don't bring any guns. And then she immediately goes to Bellamy and she's like, hey, we're doing this thing, can you bring some guns?
Yeah. Yeah. Which, like, okay, I don't know if you just want to skip ahead to that, because, right, so she has Bellamy, Raven, and Jasper follow with guns. And so it's like, okay, well, that's not a great way to start this relationship with the grounders, whatever. But then, while they're having this meeting, where, again, they're talking about these, like, you know, we were introduced to the leader of the grounders, as we know her right now, Anya. And we find out that, like, first of all, one of the flares that they sent up burnt down a grounder village, which is like, oh, shit, yeah. And, you know, and also just saying, like, oh, you're, like, then she talks about how, like, this is our land, you're invading, whatever, which, like, those have less of a reasonable basis for war. But anyway, but then while that's going on, Jasper sees that there are grounders hidden in the trees with weapons trained on Clark. So it's like, okay, so we both came completely in bad faith.
Yeah.
And, like, it did fully look like they were getting ready to shoot Clark. So, like, I don't think it was wrong of him to, like, run out and warn Clark and say, like, they're gonna shoot, get away. The fact that he then also did start shooting at them.
Yeah.
Was probably a bad move, but I get it. Like, I think that was understandable.
Right, like, because he also almost died by a grounder attack. Like, he, I think it's that he's probably traumatized by that.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And he knows exactly what a spear to the chest feels like.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Oh, and just freaking Anya, though. It was, like, such a badass.
Yeah, like, her facial structure is so, like, unique. And, like, interesting and beautiful.
Yes. It's awesome. We're like, oh. And, like, just the whole grounder, like, aesthetic is so cool to me. Like, it's awesome. I just geek out over it every time.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, you know, we also have in this episode, you know, Finn is trying so hard to garner peace between, you know, the mm-hmm. Hundred and the Grounders. And, you know, and, like, I generally agree with what he's trying to do and his perspectives and stuff. And we see other characters, like, specifically we see Raven. She's, like, during the party, she's, like, setting up bullets. She's, like, getting ready for the Grounders to invade, right? And at one point she says, like, violence is the only thing these people understand. Ooh. Which is, like, ooh, yikes. You know, but then Finn replies, like, they could say the same thing about us. And it's like, yeah, y'all haven't ever communicated. You've only ever attacked each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really have anything else for this episode. I mean, it ends with Diana launching the Exodus ship. You know, so they, like, commandeer it, basically, yeah. Even though they're not supposed to be the people on it. And then they, again, like, she does her great manipulation thing where right when Jaha is, like, maybe gonna stop it, she, like, announces that not everyone can get off the Ark as part of the Exodus plan. And then, of course, people turn on him and, you know, let her get away. But, yeah, so they launch and then they just crash the fuck into Earth, like, fiery explosion, and Clark sees that and thinks that Abby is on the ship because she was supposed to be one of the first people to come down. So, like, we end this episode with Clark assuming that Abby is dead,
which we also think that Abby's on the ship, right? Because she was, like,
right. I think it's kind of unclear to the viewer where Abby was at the end, but it's a possibility that she has died. Yeah.
So, but that wraps up that one plot line in the little bow. All the detractors just die.
All right. I don't feel like we have to do a hindsight segment because I just started doing that while we were talking.
Yeah.
But we did gain an important piece of information from Lincoln's notebook.
Yes, that there were 102 people on the ground to start with.
Yes.
So which I have adjusted my numbers here.
Right. So I guess that Wells was the 101st, and then Bellamy snuck on as the 102nd. So right. Now we know that we started out with 102. And I believe in these episodes, 4 people died total.
Well, so what number are you down to? I'm down to 91.
Yes.
Okay, cool.
So I have the adjusted, we started with 102.
Yeah.
We're now at 11 people having died, putting us at 91.
Yes, death count at 11.
Yep. All right, and then a quick few words about the books.
Sure. I find the book quite boring.
Okay, well, so I do have a summary.
Okay, lay it on me.
Which I actually accidentally read an extra chapter, but I don't think it even factors into my summary. So, in these chapters, we learn a couple things from the past. First, that Clark and Wells were dating before Clark's parents were executed. And second, that Clark's parents were forced to do human trials by the Vice Chancellor, who threatened Clark's life if they didn't. In the present, Clark continues to act as a doctor and is concerned about her friend Thalia's infected wound. Wells is trying to organize a functioning society on the ground, but everyone hates him and refuses to listen to him.
Your dad's a dick, Wells.
Bellamy is planning to run off with Octavia as soon as her sprained ankle heals. And on the Ark, Glass reunites with her mother, who manages to get Glass a pardon from Vice Chancellor Rhodes.
Which, was it just me, or did that imply also prostitution?
Yeah, it was. It emphasized how she was, like, putting on lipstick before she went to go talk with the Chancellor. And I'm like, I don't know if that's just, like, a character detail, or if that's, like, she is gonna go seduce this man.
Yeah. And, yeah, don't find the writing super captivating at this point. It's just okay.
Yeah, it's getting more, like, cheesy and dumb.
Yeah.
And, okay, I don't know if you have noticed this, this actually includes the chapter that I accidentally read ahead, which was another Bellamy chapter, but, like, literally nothing important happened in it. But multiple times now when we're reading from Bellamy's perspective, he will, like, the only metaphors that he will make are, like, relating things to, like, a girl. Like, oh, like, this thing is, like, so difficult and elusive. Like, a girl who's playing hard to get. Like, that is not an exaggeration of how...
I didn't notice that, but now that you mention it, yeah. He's like, those ladies, huh?
Which, honestly, like, that now, like, knowing that background of the book makes sense now why in the show he is, like, waking up with two, you know, topless women on either side of him.
Right, it's like you can see some of the remnants of the book, like, in the show's first few episodes. You're like, oh, that's why that's there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seems like with this, so we don't know for sure that it's the same vice chancellor who, like, forced Clark's parents to do human trials, but I'm gonna assume it is.
Right, because that would be Kane.
So this is in the book, he's Vice Chancellor Rhodes, but I'm assuming that's the equivalent of Kane. And it seems like they're setting up him to be, like, actually super corrupt. Like, not just, like, severe, but, like, you must do human trials or I'll kill your daughter kind of thing. So, like, that seems like sort of a, you know, a different direction that they're going in. But yeah, other than that, yeah, not very much happened in this, in these chapters.
Yeah.
Kind of a slow pace at this point.
Very true.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to A Bit Much.
We'd like to thank Bree Mimba and Meredith Stein for our lovely logo.
You can find us on the internet at A Bit Much Podcast, on Twitter, abitmuchpodcast@gmail.com, and we do still have a blog, but I have not touched it in terms of updating it, so it's not a very useful place to go right now.
And then, if you give me a minute, I can tell you what we're gonna do next time, if I can open up this document and scroll down to the right part. We're gonna do episodes 10 through 13 and chapters 10 through 15.
Right, so we'll be finishing the first season
right
next time.
I'm pumped.
Yes. So also just programming note, I live in California, which has recently been impacted by just shockingly frequent power outages. Like, we're recording this now in, like, a period of time between power outages. Like, I got my power back about 3 hours ago, and it might go off again tomorrow morning for a couple days. So I don't know how long it's going to take me to edit this episode, and I don't know that we'll be able to record the next one on schedule. So updates might be slow, and it's PG&E's fault.
So call them and complain.
Yes, I'm sure this is the most pressing complaint that they'll be getting. But anyway, thank you so much for listening. My name is Jenna.
And I'm Megan, and I'm pretty sure I ate a pine cone because it told me to.
Should we preface that anymore? You're just going to say that without saying that it's a quote from Monty.
I think I just want to say that. All right, it's a quote from Monty. He was high off of Jojo Bees or whatever they're called.